Provoke Podcast is brought to you by Provoke Media and produced by the international broadcast specialists Marketeers. Support for this podcast comes from Notified, the integrated, intelligent and easy-to-use PR software. Get a free demo today at notified.com.
I'm going to hand off to Avril Lorimer, who is going to introduce our first panel on moving the needle on health equity. What role can brands play in closing the gap?
Thank you so much, Paul. And you were actually one of the last people I saw before we all went into lockdown. We were working on the awards together. So it's been a long time. I look forward to judging awards together in person one of these days. So hello, good morning, everyone, or afternoon. It's great to be here. As Paul mentioned, I am Avril Goldstone-Lorimer. I'm from H&K Strategies, and I am honored to be joined by Aaron Radelet, Global Chief Communications Officer for Walgreens Boots Alliance, sometimes called WBA. And you'll see with a green backdrop, Dana Bolden, Senior Vice President, Global Corporate Affairs for GSK's Consumer Health Division. At WBA, Aaron oversees all internal, external, and brand communications globally across the organization. As pharmacies took on a greater role during the pandemic, under Aaron's leadership, WBA ramped up communications to build greater trust for the company. And what's pretty extraordinary is to date, Walgreens vaccine equity efforts have played a critical role in providing more than 40 million COVID-19 vaccinations across America. Dana recently joined GSK's Consumer Health Division, which is slated to spin off from GSK next summer of 22. Dana has 25 years in corporate communications. He's been on the front line of leading and executing large-scale business development and transformation efforts at some of the brands and businesses we all know and trust and respect, including the Coca-Cola Company and Corteva Agriscience, which was part of DowDuPont. So as Paul said, we are here today to talk about moving the needle on health equity, and specifically, what roles can brands and business play in closing the gap? I cannot think of two better brands to be driving this conversation, because WBA and GSK impact consumers' lives every single day. And I suspect if I were to run a poll, most of you, including me, have been to a Walgreens or a Boots in the past few days, or Duane Reade, to pick up something. Similarly, I'll bet a lot of you are sitting there and on your desk, you have a ChapStick, maybe you have a box of Theraflu, you should be getting vaccinated, but that's a whole nother conversation. But these are brands that directly touch people's lives, which is why it makes so much sense for them to be driving the health equity efforts. And while we certainly have the right brands, this is also the right time to be having this conversation. The global pandemic opened all of our eyes to something that's been there, significant and long-standing health inequities. Hopefully, maybe we're at a stage where we're emerging from the pandemic and we have a responsibility to don't throw it off like your mask and leave the topic behind. So today we're here to explore the role that communications has in progressing and addressing the issue of health equity. So with that, Aaron, if you don't mind, I'm just going to jump in and start with you. The vaccine effort has been central to bringing an end to this pandemic. To succeed, several health equity issues had to be addressed. That's things like access, reaching marginalized communities, tackling hesitancy. How is WBA rising to the challenge to address some of these health inequities?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that question, Avra. I just want to first say good morning to everybody and maybe even good afternoon to anybody that might be joining us overseas. It's a pleasure to be here, and thanks to Provoke for having this panel. It's a very important topic, and I'm more than happy to be here. Dana, it's good to see you on screen. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to meet in person at some point, but it's great to join you as well. And Avra, of course, we know each other, and it's good to see you on screen as well. So just to dive into your question, it's been obviously an incredibly busy couple of years here at Walgreens Boots Alliance. I joined the company just over 2 years ago, and little did I know what I would be getting myself into. I knew that one of the reasons I joined the company is that we help people lead healthier lives. And we certainly have risen to that occasion more than ever in the company's history, really, since the pandemic began. And a big part of that work has been addressing the health inequities that you mentioned, Avra. We have deep systemic issues in our country that has led to a lot of inequities that have come to the surface even more during the pandemic. And Walgreens Boots Alliance has been committed to making sure that we address those. And that happened even before the pandemic. I mean, over the years, we've worked in all the communities that we're in. We have 9,000 stores across the country, just in the US alone, about 3,000 stores in the Boots territory over in Europe. And how we try to approach that is we live in these communities. The people that work in those stores, our pharmacists and our pharmacist technicians and our retail specialists, they actually are part of those communities. And we take our role very seriously to make sure that the people that are coming into our stores are living their healthiest lives. And so if you look at how we approached equity during vaccines in particular, we made sure that we had about 1,300 vaccine clinics where we went out across the country. We had a lot of community partners that we made sure to work with. We partnered with Uber so that we could have 10 million free rides to make sure that people could get to the vaccines. We actually were able to administer about 14.5 million vaccinations in zip codes that the CDC say are underserved communities. And then from a communications perspective, we took it very seriously that we didn't just want to go with mass availability, general availability media. We wanted to make sure that we were working with media that spoke to all of our different customers, including Black and Brown customers. And we made sure that we were using some of our pharmacists to speak to those media that were representative of those communities. And so we're really proud of what we were able to accomplish. It's definitely one of those moments, again, going back to how I started this, that I had no idea we were going to be right in the center of a global pandemic, but I'm really proud of the communications team and the company in general for all of our efforts.
Thank you. And it has, I have to admit, I have the opportunity to partner with you, and it's been pretty extraordinary to be part of it. So thank you for that. Dana, I'm going to head over to you. And you're working for one of the preeminent global consumer healthcare companies, and you are producing and distributing the OTC products. These are accessible products, right, that enable people to take care of themselves. So can you talk a little bit about what role access plays in health equity? And knowing you're about to spin off, what are some of the big opportunities for GSK Consumer Health as you look to advance health equity? And you may be on mute, which is a classic 2021. Try again. No.
Epstein, if you log off and log back in again, that may solve your audio issue.
All right. So I think what we'll do is I will speak with Aaron and we'll let Dana go off and on again. So Aaron, I'm going to shift then. We'll go back to Dana and we'll talk about OTC. But I want to talk about the fact that brands are taking responsibility, which is the right thing, for delivering health information in the most resonant and relevant ways, right? We've seen a real shift there, and it's the right shift. This is the language that they're using. It's culturally accurate stories, authentic stories. It's making sure there's representation and messengers and channels. So we're seeing a shift, and it really feels like the right thing. Can you give me some examples? How is WBA evolving your approaches to how you communicate to make sure that you are more, that you're better reaching and representing the audiences that you serve?
Yeah, of course, Alvarez. So I mentioned a couple of these already. When we went about our strategy for how we were going to communicate during the pandemic, and that includes testing, vaccination, keeping our stores open so that people can come in and get the pharmaceuticals and other supplies that they need, including masks and other things that were at our stores that were vital during that period. We wanted to make sure that we were speaking to every single audience that comes in through our 9,000 stores in the US. And as I mentioned, we have 3,000 stores for the Boots side of things over on the other side of the ocean. And so what that means is when you are in communications, it's funny because you basically learn the same lessons over and over and over and over again, right? I often say, and Avery, you know this, that feelings matter over facts. You can talk about administering 40 million vaccinations, but it really doesn't bring it home as much as just telling a personal story and showing the faces of people getting vaccinated. I have memories of going with our CEO to many of those clinics that I mentioned earlier and seeing the look on people's faces and the relief and literal tears of joy when they got those shots. And so we were able to, first of all, use those examples and take the video and put that out through our various channels, through our storytelling team, and make sure that people saw that, A, they were okay getting the vaccine, that they were relieved to get the vaccine. And then we also made sure that our pharmacists of many different backgrounds and diverse backgrounds were able to speak to different communities. We also partnered with several different influencers. Some of the big names are, we had Jennifer Hudson actually come in and speak to our CEO, and we did our NBC special around that. She actually sang to one of the patients that was getting a vaccine, which was a really incredible moment to be in a small church with Jennifer Hudson singing to a patient. John Legend did a great marketing campaign with us. So I guess the overall point is the lesson that you learn over and over and over again is make sure that you meet your audience where they're at. Make sure that you understand who that audience is and then communicate in ways that they'll understand. I mean, one thing that stuck out to me is you can throw all the science you want at a lot of our patients, but if they're hesitant, sometimes they just want to be heard and listened to and talk about it. And it's, again, more feelings that matter at that moment. So we made sure to shape our communication strategy around that.
I love that. And I think that speaks to the art and science of communications, which is something else we speak about, which is we can do lots of research and we can target and we can cross-check audiences and by data to reach the right people. But there's something also just really compelling when you know you're having an authentic moment. And I can't imagine what would have been more convincing than that moment in the church. And I'm sure that was amplified widely. You know, I'm sure everybody went and said, this is what I heard happened. And I saw this, and I'll bet it built a lot of faith and confidence in vaccination. So that's amazing. Wish J HUD would sing to me while I get vaccinated, but
we couldn't do that for every single one of our customers, but we would if we could.
Doesn't feel like a good business plan. I'm going to check in with you, Dana. How is your audio?
Ever, can you hear me now?
Perfectly. Welcome okay. to the conversation. So I'm not letting you get out of that other question, but I am going to start with this one, which Aaron just picked up on, is can you talk a little bit about GSK Consumer and how you've evolved your approach to communications to make sure you're better representing your audiences?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with a little bit of expanding on the grounding you gave earlier, Avra, about the company. So, you know, GSK is probably widely known for pharmaceutical business and vaccines, and you know, GSK does a wonderful job of that. We are building a model that is very, very reliant on partners like Aaron and his company and others out there to really drive connections to healthcare through our products. So, you know, we've got great brands through our consumer health team like Centrum, Advil, Voltaren, Theraflu that you mentioned earlier. And those really are brands that do a great job of connecting with consumers, and they know their audiences very, very well. where we are evolving from is now we come out of GSK, we've got this long history of trusted science with vaccines and healthcare, and we're creating a company that is going to be the umbrella for those wonderful brands. So what we are trying to evolve to do is figure out, you know, how do we convince consumers that we've got this very, very long history, over 300 years of trusted science, but our brands are making those connections with people all around the world. So how do we marry those two strengths that we have? Really strong, you know, consumer connections with trusted science and investment in making connections. And by that, I mean, you know, so we are being, this company is being born at probably the best time for a company like ours to emerge. We're hopefully toward the tail end of a global healthcare crisis. Consumers and customers and people want brands that matter. So we feel like we're ticking that box. But the other part is bringing them together under an umbrella that allows us to let consumers know what we stand for. And, you know, so you think about the summer that we had last year where these social inequalities have been put on full display. One of our purpose is to deliver better everyday health with humanity. The humanity part of that mission speaks to bringing all of that together and taking a stand on issues that are important to people. And so we're going through this very, very lengthy, exhaustive process now about defining the things for which we stand. And, you know, fortunately, it aligns with our brands. All of our brands are, you know, rolling under the umbrella quite nicely because they all want to deliver better everyday health with humanity. So we partner with organizations like Walgreens Boots Alliance because GSK Consumer Health doesn't have presence in all the communities that are touched on. But what we do offer is that connection through pharmacists to make sure people have the ability to take better care of themselves. And even today, a great example of that is we're releasing a study that showed that one of the key strengths that emerged in this pandemic is the importance of pharmacists in the healthcare system. You know, and you think about access, you think about the stores where Walgreens Boots Alliance operates. They're in all of the communities that, you know, where we need to reach people, where people are having trouble getting to see a general practitioner or a primary care physician because they're overloaded with COVID workloads. And so, you know, we are working with partners like that to drive our products to people where they need them, where they are, and communicate the value proposition of those brands from ChapStick to Theraflu to Advil, you know, making sure that we have people who look like us delivering messages about the benefits of these products. So it a long answer to your very, very short question, Everett, is, you know, trying to use our new collective power to convene all of the people that can help us close the gaps in the healthcare system. And the role of communications in that is making sure we all talk to each other in language that we understand.
Agree. And I actually had no idea that you were launching that survey today, but look forward to seeing those results because pharmacist absolutely has a critical role to play. And that actually takes me really perfectly to my next question, which is, you know, the power of a community pharmacist is that for many people, they are their key connection to health information in their community. So engaging with members of the community is a critical component of any public health initiative, because those are the individuals, right, who will best understand the concerns and the needs of the community far better than a national or a global organization. It's really great in public health when you can get in there. Do you think there's a role for community input and involvement as we develop communication strategies? And Aaron, if it's all right, I'll start with you and then hand over to Dana.
Sure. Yeah, of course. So one of the things that I was most proud of for the company is not what we did necessarily even in the moment, but what we did in the years before the pandemic. So I mentioned that we had a lot of programs that addressed health inequities even before we started thinking about COVID vaccinations. We had a program called Vitamin Angels, for example, that gave millions of vitamins for free to people not only in the US but in other parts of the world that desperately needed those vitamins, especially expectant mothers that needed prenatal vitamins. That's just one example of some of the work that we had been doing. And then one of the other things that we did over many years through the work of Carlos Cubia, who is our chief diversity officer, and many others at the company, is that we developed relationships. We made sure that we had partnered already with community groups like 100 Black Men of America and LULAC and the Urban League, so that when the pandemic struck, we didn't just have to call them up for the first time, but these were deep relationships that we had. And then, of course, in the communities, as Dana mentioned, we've got stores, again, 9,000 stores just in the U.S. alone, in every different kind of community. We knew the church down the street already. We knew the school at the end of the corner. So we were able to pick up the phone and say, can we have a clinic here, or how can we work together? And so that's another lesson that you just learn over and over again in communications. Avery, you've heard me say this before to my team. I like to say that PR stands for public relations, but it also stands for prioritized relationships. And that's internally, certainly helped to have good relationships as we were working around the clock in a lot of challenging circumstances, but also externally. We made sure to utilize every single relationship that we had already developed over the years.
Love that. And I do love the reinterpretation of PR. So Dana, I'd love to hear from your perspective how GSK might be working with members of the community and the role that community input has in developing comm strategies.
Sure. And I promise, Ever, that Aaron and I did not rehearse this, but there are a lot of common themes here to build on. You know, one of the things he touched on earlier was that we, in our profession, we learn to do old things in new ways every day, and this is a great example. One of the challenges that we have in any company, this is not unique to healthcare or even corporations, is that we sometimes stray from the audience-focused messaging. And where the health crisis has driven us is that we have to put the audience first. And our comms team at GSK, much like many others around the world, I would imagine, really started to sort of reverse engineer. You think about the way some of the ideas, particularly in marketing and corporate communications, come out. You have this great idea, you want to advance it, and then you think about how you're going to, the channels, and then you think about the audience. What we've been able to do through this pandemic is it has given us a bully pulpit to put these audiences that have been underserved first, and then have the program structured almost in reverse order. We've said, okay, here's the audience, here's what they need, how do we deliver? And so a great example of how our teams have done that in New Jersey, where I am today, as a matter of fact, the Rutgers School of Public Health was, they are a primary partner for us in not distributing our products, but telling us, where there are gaps in healthcare in the community. And our teams looked at this problem and said, great, the School of Public Health is doing a wonderful job, but there are not enough scientists and healthcare practitioners and RNs and LNs who are in these communities. So they came to us and said, here's a need. We talked to our teams. We said, look, we can fund scholarships. That's an opportunity that we have as an organization to fund scholarships to put these practitioners. They're not communicators. They're public health professionals that are in underserved communities. But now we have a direct link with these practitioners to shape the programs. And so we are almost reverse engineering how we communicate. And so some of the things that have come out of that are really stronger connections between our brands. And it's not a commercial exercise, but it's a stronger connection between our brands, the route to market. How do we get these routes to market? And then obviously, that commercial part does come in there, but it really is sort of using communications to help be that bridge between societal, commercial, and public health need. And I think that's the opportunity for communicators that has emerged out of there. We when I was at Coke, our CEO always used to have this saying, never let a good crisis go without creating an opportunity. And that's exactly what we've seen. This has been a tremendous challenge. It's been an incredible crisis. But from a practitioner standpoint, we have really been able to leverage the need to connect with publics in a way we've never done before. And that has shaped the programs of both communications, but commercial, route to market, you name it, across the lines of business. It has given us as communicators a really strong platform.
I mean, it's exciting when you think about reverse engineering and you think about the opportunity here. So I feel the excitement. I'm excited for where you're going. So so now I'd like to get a little bit personal, if you don't mind, which is I want to ask, starting with you, Dana, on a personal level, what's been rewarding for you as you've worked with GSK Consumer and continue to do so to address and champion health equity?
It's probably obvious, Avra, in that I don't think prior to the pandemic, prior to the summer of social unrest with the murder of George Floyd and any others, that I would have been a serious candidate for consideration for a role like this. I'm not saying that I'm here because of that. I like to think I bring a lot of credentials to the table, but I also recognize that prior to the events of the last 18 months, there are not a lot of people of color in the seats in which I occupy now. And so that has created an opportunity for me personally to bring a lot of other people along who look like me and bring them into this discussion. Now, that is part of the challenge, but the opportunity that is created from there is we really have to make a difference. And I think, you know, people who have been historically underserved have been able to take the challenges that we faced over the last 18 months, 2 years, and really demonstrate that our voices matter, but they matter in ways that we can make those connections that I just described. So what's more personally rewarding for me as a result of what's been happening is we can take a critically important issue like healthcare, bring communicators to the table who can communicate to those audiences that have been left out, not by design, but people have just been, by happenstance, left out of communications, and demonstrate the commercial value that this underserved market brings to the table. So it is the classic definition of a win-win. You're providing services to people who have been historically ignored. You're improving revenue streams because you think about the purchasing power of Black and Brown people, showing them this is a way for them to take better care of themselves, to take pressure off of their national and their state and their county healthcare systems, because you don't need to go see a GP, you don't need to go see your primary care for a sniffle or a cough or a sore throat, because there are products out there that both our company and our partners like Walgreens Boots Alliance drive, and playing up that value of the pharmacist to deliver, changing this model and putting it on its ear. So the opportunity for me is personal, but in an incredibly macro way, because I'm seeing this opportunity as the ability for us to bring voices to the table that have historically not been heard. And so that gives me that a tremendous personal excitement, and I'm seeing it across the industry. I'm seeing this beautiful array of people with different personalities, different colors, different preferences, different orientations, all having a voice and being recognized in ways that we haven't been before, and changing the dialogue. And I think that's only going to make us richer as a function, as a corporate communications function, but also the companies in which we serve.
Powerful answer. Thank you. And thank you for being so honest with it. Aaron, I'd love to hear from your view, what's been rewarding for your journey in addressing health equity?
Yeah, I would build on what Dana said, and I think he touches on some very important points there. Avra, you know that my personal history, I have a family that's been involved for generations now in civil rights and social justice issues. My grandfather, going back many years, traveled with Jackie Robinson around the country talking about race relations. It's something that we're very proud of in our family's history. So to be a part of this feels very familiar to me in many different ways. And frankly, as a leader of a communications company or department in the middle of what Dana just touched on, we were talking about after the murder of George Floyd, DE&I more than ever, right? And then we were talking about health equity more than ever. And those issues obviously are very much interrelated. And as a leader, I was just so glad to see our company step up in so many different ways. I'll give you a couple examples. We started a group every month that is doing a marketing for change within the organization. We've figured out insights that we can identify across marketing as well as communication so that we can speak more to Black and Brown communities. We started as a company a Listen, Learn, Act program where we brought in experts to talk to us not only about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but how that comes together for health. One of the most memorable moments was that we brought in two foremost physician experts that talked to us about just how many determinants are stacked against different groups within our country, including those in the Black and Brown community. One thing that stuck out for me is that a Black baby born in America has double the infant mortality rate than another baby that's born into similar circumstances. This brings it home for me more. It's very deeply emotional to be able to understand, yes, you're talking about press releases and the logistics of putting together a meeting. And yes, it's nice to win the awards, like we got on Time's Most Influential Companies list. And there's a lot of other things that came about. But really what it comes down to is, again, when you're at a Black church and you're at one of these clinics and you see that there's somebody in that community that wouldn't have necessarily gotten the vaccine if we weren't able to reach out, then that's incredibly rewarding. And so as a leader, I think we're much better off for it. We were able to change our hiring practices when it came to diversity, equity, inclusion. We now have an African-American woman, my boss, as our CEO, which we're extraordinarily proud of. She's unfortunately only one of two Black women that are leading a Fortune 500 company, but hopefully that's indicative that there's progress advancing over time and will continue to be a part of the solution.
It is amazing here to have seen how the professional overlaps with the personal and how it is both impactful and probably all the more motivating for everyone involved. So this is my final question before I take a look at what's in the chat for us. This is the Provoke conference, and the people who are watching us on screen are our communications and PR, maybe GR industry colleagues. So I have to ask, what do you see as the role specifically of communications in driving towards health equity? And I think, Dana, I will start with you on this one.
You know, our role is to really continue to leverage research. I'd answer the question two ways, Albert. One is research and one is channels. And so for our function, we need to step up our ability to provide valid research and data that helps us make informed decisions, particularly as it relates to audiences I talked about earlier. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but certainly there are consumers that have been left out of the discussion. So when you think about those consumers, What are those channels that we're using to reach them, and really move away from those that are more mass appeal? So one of the things that we have discovered is that, like every other company, there's no silver bullet here. It's really that digital is the most direct, it's the most affordable, and it really allows us to customize a number of messages to different audiences. So bringing that data that shows which channels are most effective and how we can reinvent them in ways that we haven't used before. You think about how our lives have changed, you know, where we're working from home, you know, 75% of the time. Those channels that we relied on historically will not come back, at least at the levels that they were before. And so we've got to really push our leadership to embrace these new ways of communication, these new channels, and keep that audience at the fore, because it's easy to slip back into the old ways of, let's do a press release, you know, let's go to an event, let's sponsor something. Some of those things will still be important, but how you activate them is going to change dramatically as a result, at the same pace over the last, you know, over the next couple of years. We're going to see massive change in the next 18 to 24 months. So I would say, as a function, let's continue to double down on research and explore new channels.
Yeah, Dana, I'd actually add to that. I think that's an important point. What we found is that over the last couple of years, communications rose in prominence within the organization. Of course, I'm a little biased on this, but I've been told this by my colleagues as well. In comparison to marketing, because marketing traditionally, you have to put a lot of time and effort into a campaign that takes months to build, right? And to Avra's earlier point about authenticity, that was more important than ever. So you didn't need a slickly produced commercial necessarily, but just right, getting something out on those social channels that you mentioned, making sure that we were getting messages out as quickly as possible to all those various channels, that was the most important, and that resonated. We're all a lot more familiar with video conferencing and everything that goes along with that, we're a little bit more informal than we ever have been before. And I think that that reaches across our approach and communications in a lot of different ways.
And Everett, just one point I neglected is partnerships. As communicators, we've got to explore and bring new partnerships to the table, non-traditional partnerships to help us be more effective. I think, you know, Aaron and I's respective businesses, you know, we've got a natural partnership because we are a retail supplier kind of traditional relationship. But some of the partnerships that Aaron touched on earlier about, you know, reaching out to churches and, you know, 10 years ago, that would have been unheard of to think about, you know, a pharmacy chain reaching out to a place of worship, then who would ultimately reach out to a local government. But those are the kinds of partnerships that have to be created. And 9 times out of 10, those partnerships are going to be surfaced by our function because we're hearing the intel, we're getting the data, and we're bringing those to the decision makers in the organization. And by the way, we are increasingly becoming the decision makers in the organization.
I think there's probably a lot of silent nodding on screens all over with that. So here's the question that's come through in the chat, and it may take you right back to where you were, Dana, with partnerships, which is, I'm sitting here and speaking to somebody who leads communications at WBA and at GSK Consumer. It's very natural for us to be having this communication, this conversation, because you both work in the health space and in health with the health organizations that directly touch people's lives. Do you have any guidance to a communicator out there who's working for a business or a brand that just doesn't feel as obvious, but that individual feels it's the right thing to do to champion health equity? Whichever one of you wants to jump in.
Go for it, Danny. You want to take it first?
No, I mean, you know, the way I would answer that is you've got to demonstrate the passion, and we have tools available now that allow you to demonstrate that passion, and it's not just on your CV anymore. And so I think about LinkedIn as LinkedIn is a great connector of people, but it's a great source of content. And so if you are, you know, so if it's not obvious for you and you want to establish a reputation to enhance your resume to move into this space, I would advocate, you know, putting your perspective out there and making it known to people that this is an area that you care passionately about, and using those tools like, you know, even TikTok. But and I don't want to be platform specific, but there are a number. When we were coming up through the career path, you didn't have the opportunities for self-publishing like you do today, and fully exploit those channels if it's something that you want to do and move into, because that puts you on our radar screen and makes you more appealing and accessible.
And yeah, I would say, you know, going back to that, we've been having a lot of open, honest conversations more than ever at our company. The first thing that I talk to my team about is look at yourself. If you're interested in health equity, if you're interested in advancing DE&I issues, how are you approaching your personal life? How diverse is your set of friends? How diverse are your experiences outside of work? To Dana's point, how diverse is your LinkedIn? How diverse is the content that you're posting on your LinkedIn? What activities, what nonprofits you volunteer for? How are you serving the community? Because the truth is, we are what we do, right? Like, that's one of my mottos in life. And so if you're speaking to a wide diversity of people in your personal life, then that's going to influence what you can do in your professional life as well. And of course, going back to what we were saying earlier, if you have those relationships, you can utilize them even more in your professional life. And then carry that into work. Look at your own teams, you know, look at your hiring practices. Make sure that you've got that wide diversity around the table that Dana was mentioning. We are better off for it because we had to have, again, those conversations with ourselves, even in recent years, where we said, can we do better here? Can we set different metrics in terms of for each one of our teams and tie it to our compensation in terms of how diverse our teams are? Can we increase the diversity of our board, which we were able to do? Valerie Jarrett from the Obama White House ended up joining our board recently. There's a lot that can be done. All I would say is both personally and professionally, find what works best for you. You can't do it all, but what fits in the most, where hopefully you can find ways that you can add value both to your company on the bottom line, but also in the good that you're able to do for the community.
Thank you. And I do have one final question, and I think we're at time, but it's a nice question and an important one, which is, any thoughts or guidance on how we make sure that the topic of health equity doesn't get left behind as we enter into a, and I almost don't want to say this because it feels very far away, but a post-pandemic world? I don't know, Aaron, if you have any views on that.
Yeah, sure. I think about this a lot. I think about it a lot because in some ways, the easy part, and I know my team certainly wouldn't call it easy, and they shouldn't. It's been incredibly challenging over the last couple of years. But in some ways, the easy part was that we were right in the center of the story, right? Reporters, in a lot of ways, were coming to us. Audiences were coming to us. I think now the challenge, and frankly, I think in some ways it's going to be even harder work, is how do we continue to talk about these issues, not just about the pandemic, but other issues that affect health equity? We just started some equity pilots at some of our stores to address issues like diabetes and pediatric asthma and medication adherence. So we got to make sure that we challenge ourselves as communicators that this just doesn't go on to a decline and that we don't stop talking about these issues. They're more important than ever. And we got to take the momentum that we have right now and continue to use the methods that we've already talked about to reach out to various communities to make sure that they know that we are a part of their communities and that we'll continue to help them to be healthy in every way we possibly can.
Thank you. And Dana, any thoughts for you on how we continue to champion health equity in a post-pandemic world?
Sure. I would offer two specific suggestions. One is, you know, today's discussion, when we talk about inequality, it's really been about race and ethnicity. I think we need to continue to expand that conversation because it's about orientation. It's also about age gaps. You know, we're seeing a lot of elderly people being left out of the healthcare system. So let's continue to expand what it means to be underserved as we have our conversations. Well, obviously, people of color are the primary sort of, if you think about this in concentric circles, it sort of goes out and people of color in the center. But there are other groups that have been left out of this discussion. So let's make sure we keep those people in discussion. And I would think the other part would be, let's continue to explore the non-traditional partnerships that we've discovered. We were talking the other day about how, you know, stadiums have been converted to vaccination facilities. Well, okay, if we're getting to the point where more of the pandemic is in a rearview mirror, how do we keep those partnerships open? What can we do to bring, you know, more routine healthcare solutions to people using some of those crazy partnerships through stadiums and through, you know, buildings that are not used on the weekends that companies are offering up? You know, let's continue to push that. And we are uniquely positioned in our roles to bring all of those people to the table and raise those types of partnerships with our leadership, because we've got these longstanding challenges. You know, I was talking to you guys yesterday about when we return to work, Fridays are going to be pretty lonely places in most traditional offices, because people are going to realize that they can be very productive Tuesday to Wednesday, Thursday in the office and working from home Monday to Friday. How do we repurpose some of those things? And the only way you find those opportunities are people like us. And when I say like us, I mean communications professionals who are always out engaging and saying, okay, well, what if? Let's figure out what is the art of the possible. There are people that we're going to meet who could say, have you thought about maybe repurposing your space on a Friday to do this? That's where we have the opportunity to keep this conversation moving forward.
I love that. And I think if there's a short takeaway for everyone who's been with us the last 45 minutes, that if we can all ask what if a little bit more and then take it forward and make it happen, we'd be creating some significant change. So a huge, huge thank you, Aaron, Dana. I really appreciate your spending this time with us. It's an important topic, and I appreciate you sharing your perspectives.
Thank you. And I didn't get to say, because my mic was muted, I haven't seen Paul Holmes in 20 years, and he seems to have that Benjamin Button thing going on. He looks younger than when I saw him 20 years ago. It was good to see you, Paul.
Speaking of staying healthy.
Exactly. Thank you, though. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
You have been listening to the Provoke podcast, brought to you by Provoke Media and produced by the international broadcast specialists Marketeers. Support for this podcast comes from Notified, the integrated, intelligent and easy to use PR software. Get a free demo today at notified.com.